San Diego Center for Spiritual Living. Sunday, August 21st, 2022. Today's lesson is All Creatures Great and Small with Reverend Dr. Constance Cook Kaur. Good morning.
Good morning.
I am just loving it today. This theme of nature that we have this month, it so resonates with me, and I know it's because nature is the divine. So there is one power, one presence, one infinite intelligence which flows through all creation. And I call this God, the living spirit almighty, one absolute, indestructible, and self-existent cause in which we live and move and have our being, right here in nature, right here in everything that is the divine creation. And so today, we're going to talk about all creatures, great and small. You notice our icon today is a picture of a butterfly on a flower. And what it says is, vitality and beauty are gifts of nature for those who live according to its laws. Well, vitality and beauty are also gifts of nature for those who don't know they're living in accordance with its laws, and for those who think that they can change the unchangeable. They can control the uncontrollable, which is nature. Ernest Holmes is the founder of the religious science movement and the author of the Science of Mind textbook. And he has something to say about everything, it seems, because everything is related. It's all spirit, it's all divine, it's all one, and it's all natural. On page 42, in the fifth paragraph, Ernest writes, "Spiritual wisdom says that God manifests through everything and is incarnated in all men, that all is divinity, and that nature herself is the body of God." That's true. Nature herself is the body of God. So when we talk about all creatures great and small, we're talking about everything, universal and individual. There is nothing that is outside of God. There's no spot where God is not. So we need to understand, we need to look at it as everything has within it the intelligence of the divine. I would be hard-pressed to identify which part of a one-celled being, an amoeba, holds the brain. However, keep in mind that a cell, one cell, has within it all the intelligence of the divine. Because the only thing it can be is part of the divine intelligence. It's kind of a mind blower. I remember seeing pictures of amoeba in my biology textbooks, and there's just no room for a brain. So it's a good thing that it doesn't need a physical brain to have its spiritual knowing. It isn't so much that a small or microscopic creature has to have a brain or a personality as we humans understand such things, but that the intelligence exists in each cell, in each collection of cells. And there must be a sufficient intelligence within any creature, any form of creation, for it to fulfill its purpose. It might be lacking free will or not. We don't know. we only know about us. We can guess about our domesticated animals. We can guess about the creatures in the seas, but we don't know. We really don't know. But we do know that there's intelligence in the cells, and we can prove it. Earthworms regrow their tails when they're cut off. That's a fact. Can you imagine if we had the same faith in the healing of our own bodies that we do in the ability of an earthworm to regrow its tail? It's like, well, of course they do. And I don't know how many kids have cut off the tail of an earthworm just to watch it regrow. It was a science experiment. It was, you know, on the earthworm scale of things, man, that's probably brutal. Good God, they found me again. They're going to cut off my tail again, and I have to grow a new tail. This family needs to stop experimenting. Something else that's small is a butterfly. But before it's a butterfly, it's a caterpillar. Now, is there a caterpillar school that all the caterpillars have to go to learn how to become a butterfly? Is it part of their early training before they're, when they first hatch, before they're let loose on a leaf to chew on? No. There is an innate intelligence within that caterpillar that it does what it is compelled to do. It creates as it is compelled because it is the divine moving through and as the caterpillar that then creates the cocoon to form the butterfly. There is what we call a natural order to things. That's just nature expressing itself in order. And that order is also a part of the divine. And in that natural order, we find that bugs, insects, reptiles, animals, even fish, all of them are either predator or prey or both. Mostly, animals won't bother you if you don't bother them, unless they're hungry or protecting their young or protecting their territory. And size isn't the only factor that determines whether each creature is predator or prey. Because they all have their own defense systems within them. Plants have defense systems. Animals have defense systems. Some animals, some birds, they're beautiful, lots of colors, and they hide in plain sight in tropical jungles full of beautiful flowers. Some are very fast. Some are camouflaged. Some have toxins. Some fish, you can be sitting there looking at the fish in a bunch of coral and rocks and never know it's there because it blends in. A chameleon, a little lizard, it's changing. It has the capability to change its colors, to blend in with wherever it is. So if you put it on the grass, it's going to be green. If you put it on a tree, it's going to be bark colored. If you put it by a flower, it's going to be partially flower colored and partially green. I got a chameleon at the circus when I was a little kid, and so I learned these things. So in the animal world, think about who's predator and who's prey when it comes to an animal, or an elephant, and a big cat. They both have their own defense mechanisms. The big cat has claws and fangs, The elephant has its trunk and its weight and its feet. Last night as I was coming into my front door, I have spider webs and moths and little things that are all over my front porch. And periodically I take my broom and I sweep all down the spider webs, and then I notice there's too many moths. So I let the spider webs accumulate again. But last night was something different. There was this skinny, pale green grasshopper. I first thought grasshopper, but it was not a grasshopper. I think it maybe have been a praying mantis. Just right there on my door, just about eye level. So as you reach the handle and you're looking at the door, there it is, and I'm thinking, I don't want that in my house. So I thought, how am I going to get it out of my house? So I blew on it, and it just moved to another part of the door. And I blew on it there, and it moved back to that original part of the door, and I thought, So I put my hand out and kind of tried to get just under it and pushed my hand back so it would go flying, which it did. I thought, now I have to get into the house and close the door real fast. I'm not afraid of them. But what I know about nature is inside a house is not the natural habitat for a praying mantis. It couldn't live if I did that. In the Science of Mind textbook, Ernest also has something else to say. And this is on pages 76 and 77. He writes, "In order that nature may be coherent and come into self-expression, there must be an objective, a manifest world," meaning this world that we have here. In order for nature to be experienced and to experience it itself, it had to come into form. He writes, "But that which is physically outside of us still exists in the medium in which we have our being and the intelligence by which we perceive. It is the same intelligence that created it." So we know that the one power, the one presence, the infinite intelligence which flows through all creation, flows through us, flows through all things that we see as natural phenomenon, flows through all creatures great and small, flows through because it is. Everything is made up of this essence of the divine. Ernest goes on, "Therefore, while it is objectively separate, it is subjectively unified. Our images of thought arise from within a medium in which both the one who sees and that which is seen exist in a state of inner unity. God exists in everything. God exists in me, and because God exists in me, I am able to recognize other beings in whom God exists. Spirit is the medium through which I am conscious of myself, of others, and my environment." We recognize, we resonate with the divine within ourselves. Because it's in ourselves, it resonates with others. That's how we are drawn to form community. It's how we are drawn to have companions. It's how we are drawn to share who we are. Albert Einstein said, "Look deep into nature, and then you will understand everything better." All of nature is in order. It is in balance. It has its own intelligence. And when left to itself, it just unfolds in perfect order. There is no chaos in nature. You know what chaos is? Chaos is man sitting around trying to figure out how nature works. That's all it is. It's not real chaos. When there are hurricanes or tornadoes, they have their own pattern of how the air moves, how the water moves, how the tornadoes raise and lower from the ground. It's all in order. And when it has gone through an area, what you see is the evidence of natural order, everything unfolding perfectly the way it's supposed to be. And yet we human beings call it chaos and catastrophe because we built houses and we have moved in and lived in areas that have these devastating effects. You don't see the lizards complaining. No. What do the lizards do? They shelter. In nature, they shelter. One of the other things I want to talk about is bacteria. Little tiny microscopic things. We need good, quote-unquote, bacteria. It's necessary for the proper functioning of the body. Good bacteria does things like create mulch. It decomposes waste. Rotten tea, back in medieval days, was a tea made from moldy bread, which was the precursor of penicillin. Now, these are all good bacteria. Is bacteria ever bad? No. Bacteria is never bad. Bacteria is always performing its task perfectly. The imbalances in good, or what doctors call bad, bacteria affect the ability of our cells in our body to function properly. That's normal. That's normal. But our body has self-healing mechanisms to handle that. This past Monday, I had to have the cable guy come out to my cable was from the house where it's supposed to be connected up to the pole from the house. It was sagging. And so I needed to make sure that that wasn't dangerous. Before the cable guy came out, I thought, oh, I'll just get my blower and I'll blow these leaves all out of the way. So I got my blower and I plugged it in and I was blowing the leaves and the little pod things that fall off the ficus tree, blowing them out. And I wanted to get rid of the ones that were behind the air conditioner, because on the other side of the air conditioner machine, that's where the guy was going to work. So I take my blower and my brilliant ideas, wearing just my glasses, and I point it down toward where the house is. There's a little gap. And all of the leaves and all the things blow right up in my face. And I thought, okay, that's not good. But I went ahead and finished cleaning the area so he wouldn't have to traipse through them. Well, Monday night, my eye was feeling scratchy. And Tuesday morning, it was all red and swollen. So throughout this week, I have had the rare opportunity of reminding myself of how the body heals itself and doing little things to take care of that, like put a hot compress on it, wipe the crap out of my eye. Because I knew it was a process and I knew it was natural. And so the body healing itself from these very small creatures, like the irritation from a bit of grit. And when we get that irritation from the bit of grit, the body produces what it needs to produce to expel that and to clean out the area where it has been. And I didn't even realize that this was one of my Creatures Great and Small experiences for this week until Friday. And I thought, okay, I get it. I get it. The bacteria, the good bacteria, the balance of bacteria, the balance of the intelligence within that handles all these things. Our special music this morning was a hymn, one of the hymns for little children, written by Cecile Frances Alexander. And she wrote All Things Bright and Beautiful. And it is a beautiful song because it talks about how everything is part of the wholeness of the divine. The refrain is all things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the Lord God made them all. Now, maybe people don't know about the hymn. Maybe the only way they've heard those phrases are from the titles of books by an English country veterinarian, James Herriot. But this is just, and they call it a child's hymn. And they call it that because it is simple. Some of the most beautiful hymns are very simple. Very simple. And when we played it this morning, you could hear that it started out with a single child and then it kind of added a few more voices in there. I picked that one in particular because most of the others were choirs, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, some boys' choir. But I have learned that when a choir performs a simple song, it becomes complex because you've got all the harmonies, you've got the oohs and ahs in the background, you've got all these different people and they're performing, giving a complex performance to make something beautiful. And yet, the simplicity is where the real beauty is. Ernest Holmes in the Living the Science of Mind book had a section where he went through the 23rd Psalm and he called it one of the most beautiful, most powerful, most comforting psalm in the Bible. It's the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And he took each phrase and he went through and talked about it. But what he said about the shepherd, I found very important. He said, a shepherd cares for his sheep lovingly and kindly. Lovingly and kindly. He feeds them, he shelters them, and tends them if they are ill. So, throughout the Bible, we find references to the shepherd as a loving presence, guiding, guarding, and keeping. Nature, the divine, is that shepherd. Each of us get to play the role of shepherd for those that are in our domain. We get to be loving. We get to be kind. We get to feed and shelter and nurture others. We get to guide others. We get to guard others and keep others. But most importantly, we get to do all of that for ourselves and allow others to do it with us, for us, because there is only one. And when we are helping others, we are helping ourselves and we are helping all. Ernest said that the sheep don't worry. They're not afraid. They have a sense of being cared for, a feeling of security. We can always feel that, knowing that the divine is right there. We are always cared for. We are always nurtured. We are always loved. We can be secure in knowing that God is with us always. Goes back to that, there is no spot where God is not. The omniscience, the omnipresence, the omnipotence, the all-powerful, the all-knowing, the ever-present is right here all the time. We have within ourselves a good shepherd tending to the flock of our thoughts. We too can express that for and with others. All creatures, great and small, the Lord God made them all. We the people, human beings, we are also creatures. You know, I've been mostly talking about smaller sized creatures. When you think about large creatures, great creatures, many of the things that come to mind early on are like science fiction or scary things, like the 50-foot woman. Did you ever see the science fiction movie, The 50-foot Woman? When I was thinking about how animals will pretty much leave you alone as long as you leave them alone, I was thinking how there's a possum in my yard. And I have determined that he is permanently resident because of his schedule. He lives on the far side of my house. And at a certain time at night, he jumps over the little fence part and walks down my sidewalk. He used to scare the heck out of me. And so I would throw little rocks next to him to make him move on. I would make hissing sounds. I would stomp my feet. And I thought of the 25-foot woman. What is a 6 to 8 inch high possum thinking when there's an over 5 foot tall human being monster stomping their feet and throwing little stones near them and hissing at them? I must have been scaring that poor little thing. His heart must have been racing. I didn't think of it like that. I thought of me being scared of him because he was unpredictable to me. I couldn't control him. Of course, I didn't need to control him. He was just going about his business doing what he wanted to do. And as long as he didn't come in my house, as long as he didn't come up on my porch, I realized he's not hurting anything. So I can back off. So now when I see him, I just watch him. And he'll come out and he'll pause at the part of the sidewalk where you can either come up the steps or go out to the street. And he'll look and then he'll just keep on going. I think he wants to make sure it's me and it's not some predator. We make up monsters in our heads. of things that we're afraid of. There are real legitimate monsters like mummies and Frankenstein and ghosts that you have to call the Ghostbusters. You know, there's all kinds of real monsters that we've got here that we think, and they are no more monsters than are the ideas in our head. But they do take up space in our minds, time in our lives to think about them. So when we're going to be thinking about all creatures great and small, perhaps we could remember that it's all God, great and small, in every manifestation. We people are also creatures, and we've been given a life of free will. I get to choose if I want to be afraid of that little possum. If I don't bother it, it doesn't bother me. We are made in the image and likeness of the Creator. Since we know that God is within everything, I was thinking, the image of the Creator must also be in possums and dogs and cats, because the image of the Creator is everything created. Everything. So what we get to remember is we get to choose. We get to choose to be bright and beautiful. We get to choose to be great or small of purpose. We get to choose to be wise and wonderful. For the good Lord, the Lord God, made us all. And so I thank you for your time, for your attention. Namaste.